105 Drive with Julian Clover.
Cambridge 105. The panel.
Got a collection of three panellists. A couple of them have been with us before last time around. Somebody new to introduce to you as well. And well, we'll start with the semi-regulars from last time around. Blogger Richard Taylor, Unite the Union's James Yowd, and also we welcome for the first time here transport campaigner Emma Fletcher. She's also the managing director of Smithson Hill. So welcome to you all.
Welcome.
Thank you very much for coming. Now, Emma, I'd kind of like to start with you, really, because we've got lots of things happening with regards to transport. What I think is a complete gift, really, to us all. On Monday, we had Labour declaring their... No, sorry, wrong way around. On Monday, we had the Lib Dems declaring their six-point plan for travel and transport in Cambridge. Today, we have Labour declaring their seven-point plan. So I guess we have to come up with our own eight-point plan between now and the end of the programme. But you've been organising a meeting for South Cambridge here, where arguably the travel situation is just as bad as it is in the city. You've got your own problems, and then you've got to come and suffer hours later.
I think the real problem is the south of the city experiences transport from every direction, and so therefore it's hampered by growth in Suffolk, growth in Essex and growth in Cambridgeshire, and everybody trying to get up to Norfolk. So it's a fairly complex model down to the south.
It is a bit of and the bus services as well, having sort of occasionally caught a bus from South Cambridgeshire into the city, that's not much fun either.
No, they can't be called rapid, that's for certain. They go through quite a few of the villages. You get a nice sightseeing tour as you head into Cambridge.
Oh, yes. So what, you know, for the point of view of the South Cambridgeshire resident, what needs to be fixed first?
The problem is there are a number of things that need to be fixed, and there's no one quick, easy answer. The real road under strain is the A505, which links in with the A1307. So for anybody local, it's the roundabout at McDonald's near Hinkston. That comes under significant strain, as that road is an east-west route, an alternative to the A14. So I think that's probably the first one to look at. But there are a number of issues, but that one in particular is probably the highlight.
And presumably there's pressure every time, you know, myself on Drive and Neil and Linda on Breakfast, daily reading about the latest incident on the A14, and if that's happening in that area, off goes the traffic and they head in your direction.
That's very true. And also the M11 doesn't join to the A11 and the A11 doesn't join to the A14. So actually, if something could be done for that, you've suddenly got a proper ring road for Cambridge.
Richard and also James, I'll start with Richard. It seems to be that transport is developing as a bit of a theme. I guess we shouldn't be surprised by that. But how close do you think those two plans are between the Lib Dems and Labour?
It certainly looks as if Labour and the Liberal Democrats, who are the two largest groups on the City Council, are making transport one of the big issues of this election. I think it's really difficult to get to grips with any details of what's being proposed. I think that they're both rather vague. And I think one of my concerns is that perhaps if Labour might make some quite dramatic changes to the city on the back of this election, we could see parking controls brought in to many more areas or even across the city, and we could see controls on who can drive into the city.
Because there is the talk of the congestion charge, isn't there, as well, which has raised its head before, and it's back again.
It's certainly something that's been debated at length in Cambridge, but I don't think that that's something that's being proposed in these elections. What we've got in these elections is a question of whether or not we should control traffic coming into the city. Both Labour and Liberal Democrats are saying we need to reduce the number of cars in the city, but they're leaving it quite open as to how. And essentially, what we're being promised is a debate on it, by both sides.
James, do you think that you're connected with Unite, of course. Do you think your members would be happy with proposals for a levy on employee parking at workspaces? I didn't actually realise that they were employers who offered parking, but apparently there's enough to get some revenue from.
This was proposed by the university, which is one of the biggest employers in the city. I don't think it's a bad thing that it could be introduced. I believe in Nottingham they tried introducing this scheme. I don't know whether the effects were positive or negative. Whether there will be a congestion charge at some point in the future, I think, is an inevitability, because simply the roads in Cambridge can only contain so many cars and so much traffic. For me, one of the amusing things about this £500 million city deal money for various transport projects is the wackier ideas that have come up via various academics, various groups, sort of burrowing through the streets of Cambridge.
I think that's my favourite one, the underground system for Cambridge.
None of them are going to happen. They're all absurd. And what we will be left with is a need to reroute car traffic outside of the central area to allow efficient transport scheme. It will probably be based on buses, because I can't imagine Cambridge being big enough ever to accommodate a tram service. And that's how you, and I think, you know, Labour has made some good points. I'm a little bit biased. I haven't read in detail both the Labour and the Liberal Democrat plans, but there are lots of things in the pipeline because of this funding. Of course, this funding isn't assured. And there's a lot of good stories for John Vale to write up about, lots of exciting headlines that can happen. And at the end of the day, what will have to happen is there will have to be some way in which people that live outside of the city because they can't afford to live in the city are not disadvantaged financially by whatever system is implemented. So that means that us that do live in the city, I think, will also have to pay some sort of cost.
Emma, this is a curiosity which has always confused me, really, is that there's only so many places in central Cambridge where you can still build, yet there seems to be the problem of the traffic coming in still. I would have thought that people living in South Cambridgeshire and other places are potentially going to the Science Park and to other places on the outskirts to work, rather than, now obviously there's some people coming in, but new people are surely going to new places, because they're not being built in Cambridge.
I think it's a real mixture of the whole, to be honest. I think house prices have forced people to live further out, so therefore they've got to commute back in again. You look at buses, they're not running at decent hours, regular services, that's a big issue, and they're not fast enough.
Mm.
So I think it's a very complicated situation. There's no quick win. I think we need to have some long-term plans and some medium-term plans and some short-term wins. But one of the things we have to do is make transport around Cambridge reliable. You need to know that whatever mode of transport you're going on, it gets there at the right time in a regular fashion. And also at the end of the day, I think people are going to have to be incentivised to change their mode of transport, be it a better, quicker service or some sort of pricing structure.
Do you think there needs I've been working from home for about the past 12 years, so it's difficult for me to judge, but in terms of the employers, are they staggering hours? Could they do more to maybe take the pressure off, to make the rush hour, there's always going to be a rush hour, but to maybe make it a little bit less painful and stretch it out a bit?
I think there's definitely a move towards that. Definitely from the high tech companies around town, there's much more emphasis on flexi working from home. But actually, it's some of the other businesses and maybe possibly the colleges and universities that also need to consider that as well.
And with all those costs that you mention, housing costs being the top one, people moving outside, I wonder how somebody who is outside of Cambridge and commutes in and then finds themselves confronted with a congestion charge to pay, on top of maybe charges which are at the park and ride sites, which I think a lot of people aren't particularly happy about, that's not going to go down at all, well, is it?
It's not going to go down well at all, but it's a question of fairness, and it's how do you actually capture that price? And that was a key thing that came out of at a Monday's meeting. How do you genuinely capture that cost? You know, should you actually be incentivising people to go on buses by making them cheaper and parking free actually as a way of relieving the transport, or should you be penalising with taxes? It's a very, very difficult and complex question.
This is a carrot and stick. Tell us a little bit more about the meeting, because this was one which was organised to, I guess try and get views really of the person in the street.
I think it's also trying to get understanding. The issues that are happening in the parishes and the villages are different to those that are happening to the residents' associations and what they represent to the south of Cambridge, together with major employers. And it's a really complex and tricky question, because at the end of the day, everybody will have to suffer a little bit of pain, and it's how you balance that out. You know, people want reliable buses in if they're going to use them, rather than using their cars, but at the same time, people in the environs of Cambridge don't want that environment ruined and wrecked because of more bus lanes and more traffic.
And do you think there should be intervention on the buses? That's to say, some order, I don't quite know how you'd arrange that these days, but in order to make Go Whippet and Stagecoach to run buses at the times which are useful, obviously, presumably at the moment, it's pretty much supply and demand, but, you know, to force, you know, these buses would have to run empty for a few months because the word would have to get around that they were there. Do you think that there should be that sort of intervention?
Safe to say, one of the conversations we've actually been having is talking with the commercial operators about how they could operate buses that suit the commercial activities in the south as well as the residents. Mm. The real key thing is that the real need is peak time hours, and what do you do with the buses and the drivers out of peak hours?
I guess, Richard, it's nice to have the guided busway to go up and down, but there's other roads in Cambridge that buses could run on.
Well, something the City Deal has had a challenge with is the proposal for a new bus-only slip off the M11 towards Addenbrookes, and one of their concerns is that they might end up building that but not have a bus company running a service on it, because the City Deal and public money goes into building the infrastructure, but as you just mentioned, we don't directly control who runs the buses. We can have influence over it. We can provide infrastructure and hope they'll use it. We can provide subsidies, as has happened in Cambridge, kicking off a new bus service from Abbey across to Addenbrookes. Mm. So we can influence it, but we don't have direct control over public buses here. It's free market and competition that we're relying on to provide the service, or perhaps some of the companies or the biomedical campus themselves. That's been suggested that perhaps employers might run buses.
I remember on this radio station, actually not that long ago, actually probably in the last year or so, there was we had a piece on the old pie factory and how they used to bus workers, and it used to be the done thing. I remember when when I lived in Norfolk, you see the Bannan poultry van would come around and collect up the people and deposit them back home again.
But that's the very thing that's happening to the south. The businesses and the commercial parts of the south do pay, and they do bus their own people in. But then could that service also be shared by the people living in the villages to go back into Cambridge?
I guess that's the thing. If there is an organisation, and I don't know, there's, for the sake of argument, there's always five seats on that bus. That could be, I don't know, five pensioners coming in to do the shopping or something.
Well, it's not five seats. It's a completely empty bus once they brought the people out of Cambridge.
So there's, of course, yes.
There's definitely some relationship that could be built there, and that's what we're trying to achieve.
James?
Yeah, I mean, I would just say there is a perfect example of this working, and this is in London, where we have a fully regulated bus system. We have a very high usage of buses since it was regulated under the Mayor of London, first Ken Livingstone, now Boris Johnson. There's been a doubling of bus journeys since then in the capital, while in the rest of the country it has halved, which means that two-thirds of all bus journeys are now made within the City of London, within Greater London. The, you know, companies providing their own buses, all that sort of thing is fine, and free market, you know. One of the interesting things in legislation coming forward that the Conservatives are bringing in is a bill which would allow local authorities to join up and actually go back and say, we would go to what will be a transport commissioner, a bit like a planning inspectorate for the whole of England, and put in a financial case for essentially running it as a public service. And this is then something which could be done through the developing companies in the south of the city, something that could be done through, for instance, the Park and Ride, and joining it all up rather than having these disparate entities of these bus companies and these people in their cars going around saying, you know, what are we going to do about congestion? Actually, some joint up thinking. And, you know, it just so happens that My Union Unite represents the bus drivers in the City of Cambridge in Stagecoach. And I think, you know, that would be something that the bus drivers themselves, the people that are supplying the buses for the passengers, would be very interested. Just another quick point I would make about transport also is, I think carrot stick is fine. We also, what we have, you were asking Emma, what the situation, you know, there's not much more employment in the city, but there is an increasing wealth in the city, and that means that people are making, you know, journeys in bigger cars and making more journeys in cars. And there has to be, with the stick, there has to be some reflection of that for it to be fair, that your carpenter or your plumber is not paying the same as the person that lives in Shelford and goes in their 4x4 to drop their children off at a private school on Trumpington Road and that sort of thing, because otherwise it won't be seen as fair. And I think that is essential as well, that it is done in an economically democratic way, whatever the outcome of the city deal and whatever the eventual outcome. Just one quick point about something that can be transformative. I was at the opening of what's referred to as the Tesco cycling bridge on Riverside, and that is now used by thousands of people every day, and it's a link, and hopefully when we get the Chisholm Trail, that will be another great thing, and people will have forgotten about all the arguments against when it's implemented.
Okay, we'll call a halt to the transport section, ironically, to do the travel news. We'll come back and we'll talk a little bit about Europe and also the police and crime commissioner. It's 6:24.
Cambridge 105 Travel
with Wispar, the social media and messaging app where you're in control.
Eastbound on the A14, got one lane closed and there's queuing traffic, long delays after a lorry broke down round about the Junction 28 Buckingway Road, Cambridge Services. Congestion once kind of stayed still, really. It's still back to Junction 24 at Godmanchester. A tyre change is apparently what's required there. Westbound between Junction 31, the M11 at Girton, and Junction 29 at Bar Hill. It's plain old slow traffic on that one. And in the city, well, it's Hills Road, both directions, slow traffic at Glebe Road. This is the roadworks area, our old friend, the temporary traffic lights. On the rails, it's easing slightly, though we've still got delays of 30 minutes and some cancellations on the Greater Anglia line between Liverpool Street and Cambridge. A problem remains under investigation. Cancellations could be at short notice. Now, consider yourself warned on that one. Looking at the trains coming into Cambridge, we did have the 11 minutes past six from Liverpool Street, which was delayed. We don't seem to have any others on the list at the moment. Yes, we do. The 18:45 arrival in, currently 22 minutes late. And the 18:58 from Stansted Airport, that's delayed. I suspect that's probably a separate issue. Cambridge 105 Travel, update you again at 20 to 7.
Cambridge 105 Travel
with Wispar, the social media and messaging app. For more details and a free account, visit wispar.com.
This is 105 Drive.
Catch up with what's happening in Cambridge by joining me every Thursday afternoon. We take a look at what's making the headlines in the city, plus up-to-the-minute entertainment news, as well as a couple of brain teasers with the mystery year and our higher or lower quizzes. Join me, Mike Pryor, on community radio in your city, Cambridge 105, this Thursday at 1.
Are you thinking of selling or renting out your property? At Hockey's Estate Agents, we've been in business for over 100 years and are trusted local independent experts, having offices in Cambridge, Willingham and Fulbourne. To find out the true value of your home, call us today on Cambridge 356 054.
My name is Emily. I have a learning difficulty. I need support most days to help me at home. Help me with cooking and sometimes cleaning sometimes and all that kind of stuff. And to take me horse riding. Can you help?
Dimensions is recruiting support workers now for Emily and people like her throughout Cambridgeshire, Bedfordshire and Hertfordshire. If you think you could make a difference, search online for Dimensions or text support to 81156. That's support to 81156.
Cambridge 105.
It's the election panel, which we're doing every Wednesday night through to polling day. And I'm reminded to tell you that the deadline for registering to vote is Monday of next week, April the 18th. You can technically leave it up to 11:59pm, but I urge you not to. If you've got a polling card, then that means you've already registered. City Council have distributed them throughout the city now. I've got mine not that long ago. And if you can't get to a polling station on the 5th of May, you can also get a postal vote. And the deadline for that is the 19th of April. And you can find more details, because you may be in the Cambridge City, you may be in South Cams, and you'll find that at aboutmyvote.co.uk. So, we will turn our attention now to Europe, and one of those sort of entertaining little reports we get from time to time was something done by our colleagues at Sky News. Jonathan Samuels, if my memory serves me right, used to work for Look East at one time, has been speaking about Brexit to people not just in Cambridge, but also in Ely as well. Let's have a listen.
We've brought a preview of the government's EU leaflet to Cambridge and Ely. Two cities physically close, but far apart ideologically when it comes to the referendum. Academic high-tech Cambridge is mostly for staying in. On the whole, people here support the leaflet and the government's proposal.
Would something like this change your mind?
No, because I've already decided what I'm going to vote. I want to stay.
And you're quite adamant about that?
Absolutely, yeah. It would be ridiculous to leave. And it would imperil the huge amount of scientific research that's going on in this university.
In terms of just a leaflet being sent out, I don't think that's enough to have someone make a decision, not with five pages anyway.
And you want to stay in, and that's that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we should stay in, absolutely. I couldn't give you a full backed-up reason why, but I just think it's a nice thing to be part of. A bigger community, I guess.
Yes, I'm voted to stay in, I think. Yes, I just feel like it's one world and we all live there together, and I think it would cost a lot of disruption and years of sort of uncertainty.
From King's College, Cambridge, it's just a few miles up the A10, across the fens to Ely, a cathedral city which was once an island surrounded by marshes. Less affluent, further from London and rural, many here believe the UK's better off as an island, set apart from the meddling of Brussels.
I mean, this leaflet obviously puts the government's case very strongly. Have you made your mind up yet?
Probably out.
Why is that?
But, I think we should perhaps just stand on our own 2 feet a bit more. But
when that leaflet drops through your door next week, what are you going to do?
Well, put it in recycling.
It's not going to change your mind?
Not a bit. That's convinced me more than ever.
At the moment, I'm out.
And you tell me you'll be voting out. A brochure like this won't help change your mind?
No, not at all. Because I can see it for what it is. Mind you, I've paid £9 million for it.
Well, it's been a fascinating road trip to road test this pamphlet. And what people are saying is that, yes, they will listen to both sides of the argument, but ultimately they'll go with their gut instinct. It'll be an emotional decision.
And that's something no leaflet can dictate. Jonathan Samuels, Sky News.
Ah, forget they do proper outro still on the television. Right, we've got the election panel here. Richard Taylor, the blogger, James Yowd from Unite the Union, and also Emma Fletcher, Managing Director of Smiths & Hill, also a transport campaigner. Has her hands up? Well, no, a show of hands doesn't really work on the radio, but who's got the election leaflet for and who hasn't? Emma, you've got it.
I've had it in Cambridge.
Richard, you've got it. James? No sign.
I haven't
had mine either. I feel like I'm missing out. Emma, what did you make of it?
I have to confess, I haven't read it. It sat on my kitchen table.
Oh, that's interesting. And what's it doing on the kitchen table? Is it sort of like surrounded in pizza leaflets or?
To be honest, it will probably go into the recycling like the gentleman said in the clip. I'm not sure how many people read booklets like that. You read the front cover, it's black and white. Nothing excited me about the leaflet to make me think I wanted to read on.
Richard, what do you make of it?
Well, I flicked through it, but my first reaction is just this is an inappropriate thing for the government to be spending millions of pounds of our money on. I just don't think they should be writing to us about one side of the referendum campaign.
I'm convinced at one point they said that they weren't going to do it, and then all of a sudden they do, and I think early reaction
we're
was...
publicly funding
You're publicly
campaigns.
Funding an out leaflet as well, because there is such a thing, and in my days when I was an election agent, you all get a free post, and a free post is delivered at the cost, formerly at the cost of the government via the Royal Mail, but now, of course, Royal Mail is private. It's at the cost of the government for each side, and that will be each household in the country will get a leaflet from both sides of the campaign. Personally, I think it was a stupid thing to do because it just plays into the sort of, you know, knuckle draggers of UKIP in their quest to find a reason for us, yet another reason why the EU is being evil, but now it's David Cameron evilly doing something that Boris didn't want him to.
Mm. It's interesting. I'm old enough, just about anyway, to remember the previous election from the confines of Miss Brown's class. Apparently, but it was. There was two leaflets, I seem to remember. There was a yes leaflet and there was a no leaflet. And I think all households got them. The only thing I remember that one was brown and one was yellow, and I can't remember which was which. But it seems, you know, sensible to have one of each.
We are. We're putting public money into both campaigns. That's why it was so important recently to identify who is going to lead each of the campaigns, because they're entitled to grants. And
the no campaign seems to have enough trouble working out who's going to lead its own campaign.
I think they've worked out which one is going to be the official
campaign
now.
I don't know. From the confines of what we heard in that piece from Sky News there, it's very much dividing almost on city walls.
One thing I would say that is wrong with the argument is that it is the Boris v. Dave show, and that it is purely being done. And this applies to both sides, and I am an in person, but I apply it equally to the inside, if not more so, that it is so seen solely as an economic debate, the pound in your pocket, to use the phrase that Harold Wilson once used so erroneously. It is not just about an economic debate. It is about us and who we are as people and whether we want to be part of Europe and part of, for instance, my grandparents who came from Italy to this country, to the cotton mills in Lancashire after the war, and the peace that we've had since then. And that we don't get that from either side, and that switches off a lot of people, that it's just about the pound in your pocket. It's not.
And it's interesting as well, I noticed, I think it was Unison, correct me if I'm wrong, you'll know the answer straight away, James, another union which is supporting us to stay in. It seems to be on the union side of things.
The unions are strongly in support because, unlike some on the left who still think it's 1975, the EU throughout the past few decades has brought an enormous amount in terms of legislation for people in the workplace, labour rights, and some of the things that underpin the labour rights we have in this country are as a result of EU legislation. And frankly, as someone representing the trade unions tonight, I would be very worried about people's rights in the workplace if we left the EU.
Emma, with your managing director's hat on, when you speak to fellow MDs and senior people in business, do they, you know, obviously they may not necessarily welcome all of the legislation which has come their way from Europe. What's the sort of feeling of Cambridge business?
I believe we need to be in. I think the trouble is actually speaking about it is very difficult. Having a view either way can be very polarising. Personally, I don't think the reflection of Sky is very good, because I think actually Ely has far greater aspirations than they were given credit for. Mm. Also, it's a fairly commuter city. What time of day were they there? Were there young people there that, you know, are in Cambridge working, etc.? So I think it's very tough to say Ely's out and Cambridge
it is. It is interesting, though, and I'm optimistic that Richard will back me up on this. When you you sit and watch a Cambridgeshire County Council meeting, it is noticeable. The more you get towards the fens, seem to be more Eurosceptic.
I do live
here
on the edge of the fen. I'm in East Cams. I'm going to defend it that actually it's a progressive area, and actually, you know, that's one of the big issues that people think Cambridge is the bright lights and the fens are not. I think there's some exciting stuff coming from Ely in the fen, so I'm going to stand up and defend it to the hilt and say, actually, I don't think it's a clear
My mother lives in Ely, so she now has a second person who's progressive in East Cams.
There we go.
Well, certainly the north of the county has elected and there are quite a number of UKIP councillors to the county council, and because of the way the county council is balanced now, they have quite an influence over how our counties run. On the Europe question, I agree with James that it's to do with more than money, because when people are talking about money, we had on the clip someone talking about research money. Well, actually, we put more into Europe than we get out. So we'll actually have more money to spend on those things that currently European money is going into, not less. So I don't think that's an argument for coming out of the European Union. But I would like to see us more locally take decisions on things like working hours. James gave that as an example of something we've had come down from Europe. I would much rather our MPs took those decisions, because I feel more connected to my local MP for Cambridge. I feel there's someone I can lobby, and I feel our Parliament is the right place to take those decisions.
But it's about universal rights as well, and I think things like a universal right to a weekend, universal rights to maternity, paternity pay, holidays, sick pay, those sort of things in a civilised Europe. And I do still believe, despite, and I am a reluctant EU fan, because I went on a trade union delegation to Greece and saw what happened as a result of the austerity imposed by the Troika. But those people, and those in Spain and those in Portugal, they remember the colonels, the fascists, and they do not want to go back to, and Europe for them is a positive thing, and we are all inclusive, and I don't care really if we can spend one or two more billion in this country. As far as I'm concerned, it enriches us all that we can give back to Europe that which others cannot provide for themselves. It enriches us all as a continent. And I think the problems that we are facing with the refugees are very much problems made by us. The problems in Syria are the problems of Blair and Bush, and the decisions in Libya are the problems made by Sarkozy and others. And I'm not saying that that people should not be afraid, because of course people feel afraid of sudden change, but I do think that there is a more harmonious way, and I think we should be very worried about the rise of the far right, particularly in France, and also we're seeing in Germany. And I think this feeds into that negative feedback loop about that.
I'm sure we'll come back to Europe. I do want to get on to, because it's further away, isn't it, the vote on that, than our local elections. But the other one, which is taking place pretty soon, is Police and Crime Commissioner. And I don't know, this doesn't seem to be exciting people that much. Richard, do you think that that the public are just racing to get out there and vote in their replacement?
I really doubt it. I think we've had quite a low profile police and crime commissioner in Cambridgeshire compared to some places in the country. I've only seen him in action because I've been actively going out to watch him in action at the police and crime panel.
With mixed success, of course, has been notably documented.
I have tried to speak to him as well when he's come to speak to people in Cambridge on the Market Square, just to try and find out what he's doing. But it's a really big and serious role. It's actually it's in some ways it's bigger than the City Council in terms of how much taxpayers' money you've actually got to spend, and it may grow. It's highly likely to include the fire service, so the strategic control of the fire service will go to this one individual, and it may well turn into, over the course of this person's, whoever we elect, term of office, they could become a blue light commissioner. So you've got huge influence over everything from the ambulance service, which gives you a bit of influence over the NHS and A&E, right through to our justice policies across prisons, probations, and the police. A massive role, massive amount of money, and of course it's all concentrated in one person, which in my view is
how much of a team does Sir Graham have at the moment at his disposal to advise him on this, that and the other?
Well, our previous Conservative Police and Crime Commissioner Graham Bright established a substantial office around him. Some people to essentially do the job of police and crime commissioner, outreach workers to go around to public meetings and to meet people. He appointed one of his friends as deputy commissioner on a hefty salary to take over some of the finance parts of the job. And he's also kept a whole cadre of staff correspondence.
What do you think's going to happen when the new man, and it is sadly, as far as I'm aware, the choice of men at the moment, when they take control, are they going to be like a football manager who brings in their own backroom staff, or do you think that those people will be retained no matter who and of what colour the police and crime commissioners from?
Well, the deputy is the only political appointment, so that's the current commissioner's friend Brian. He was appointed deputy. We don't yet know, as far as I can tell, whether any of our current candidates are planning to appoint deputies. They don't have deputies as running mates, which you might expect them to do if they have someone in mind who they were going to appoint, and I don't think any of them have said whether they'll appoint a deputy on merit or whether they have one of their friends in mind who they will give a salary to. But in terms of the office, the head of the office is currently the same person who was head of the police and crime commission, the police authority's office, and that was, I believe the word is novated. It was just continued on as if nothing happened, and that person stayed in post and became the police and crime commissioner's chief of staff. So they will be there. The new incumbent will have this office inherited, and it will be up to them whether they reduce the number of staff. Like some police and crime commissioners around the country have no or very few staff. A lot of it depends on what you turn the role into.
Mm. We've got four candidates for this. Jason Abelwhite for the Conservatives is currently leader of Huntingdonshire District Council and also actually chairman of the Cambridgeshire and Peterborough Police and Crime Panel. Dave Bagent, who is, I think, the own, is the Labour Cambridge City Councillor, former firefighter, which makes that an interesting one. Nick Clark, former head of Cambridgeshire County Council for the Conservatives, but standing for UKIP, of course, and Rupert Moss Eckhart, who is Lib Dem, and actually a former Cambridgeshire County Councillor for Arbury. So that's an interesting collection, but not as many as last time, and no independents to be seen there, James.
No, we were just discussing this actually before we came on air. It seems that the only way in which what are true blue counties in terms of somewhere like Cambridgeshire can sort of bring the role of police and crime commissioner established just under 4 years ago alive is by these independents coming in. And a lot of the things Richard has said is true, because there is very little accountability. Of course, there's even less accountability of Graham Bright because he's not standing for re-election. So the original
one term only.
So he got elected and he could do what he wanted. And there's this chap who I only just learnt this evening is leader of Huntingdonshire District Council, who presumably will be his successor just by the sheer fact that Cambridge has Cambridge and Peterborough, which broadly will probably vote Labour, but the rest of the county, which will vote Conservative.
You don't think that, you know, Nick Clark, formidable candidate for UKIP,
I hope my friend Dave will come second, but I think It could be a race for second place between UKIP and the Labour Party. I think that's a very good point. Just to digress from that, the whole accountability and what Richard's just been talking about the amount of money being spent on this office. Emma was, we were discussing this, and Emma said, you know, I don't feel much safer. I don't want to speak for you, Emma. But and I said, well, you know, when Richard was saying the amounts involved in running this one office, you're probably less safe, because what we have is an elected bureaucrat taking a large salary, taking an entire office and appearing behind closed doors on a regular fashion, when we already had the councillors who are representative of the communities that elect them, which was perfectly good. Now, my one concern about what is happening is the merger of the fire service and the ambulance service, the impact that will have on all three emergency services, and whether they're going to, as a result of government austerity and cuts, whether firemen are going to become glorified paramedics or police officers become glorified firemen. Because the evidence from this is that the professionals themselves are very against this for the very good reason they are highly trained and they are trained to do the job that they are doing. They are not trained to, a fireman is not trained to be a paramedic and a police officer is not trained to go and fight a fire.
Yeah, it really does concern me.
That.
Yeah, you want the best person for the job. I'm wondering if maybe some of them should be campaigning to keep the streetlights on, perhaps. Emma, you must feel safe.
I do feel safe, but in terms of the presence of having this role, I'm not sure I've seen, and I think maybe many members of the general public feel the same, I'm not sure I've seen much evidence of what that role has brought me during the last 5 years.
It is one of those things you kind of feel that, it's from my perspective, I kind of feel I only know there's a police and crime commissioner because I sit here talking to people on the radio and get sent press releases. I don't see too much other evidence from it.
I think that's the case, and I think whoever takes on this role next has to work really hard to bring general members of the public along with them. I think a little bit more visibility would be a good thing.
Mm. And does that, I don't know, do we need a Boris kind of figure to sort of stand up and wave the flag to make it apparent that he's there, somebody who actually gets up and is quite vocal perhaps?
I always think characters help make the world go round and make things a little bit more interesting. I don't know the candidates personally and what they're actually campaigning for and their angles are, but I do think you need somebody who can inspire and actually lead people, and that means bringing the general members of the public along too.
I'm kind of figuring what we need is, I've very nearly said a charismatic deputy, but given that there doesn't appear to be one until the person's in charge, then that's possibly a rubbish idea. We have to wrap up now, but thank you all very much. I should do the legal stuff as well, really, to remind people that there's a full list of candidates in all of the elections on the relevant websites, including Cambridge City Council and South Cambridgeshire District Council. My thanks to the panel, blogger Richard Taylor, Unites, James Yowd, and also transport campaigner Emma Fletcher. Thank you all very much. It's 10 minutes before 7.